Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And Jim, we start with the good. Hillary Clinton is a little bit worried. In fact, she might be a lot worried about where her campaign is headed, especially as the investigation into her email server and classified emails that were on that server and so forth, that whole thing unfolds. And now Reuters has dived into this even more with a look at her gestures over time when she's on her message, which is obviously not speaking about the email server. She crisply emphasizes parts of her speech with an in-command finger point and miniature hand chops in Las Vegas during that shrug press conference in the orange pantsuit, which I know a lot of people found appropriate, was, in contrast, awash in loose hand gestures that expanded and contracted, dipping and weaving. She would pull toward her chest when she came back to her theme that she had done nothing wrong. She raised eyebrows, which can indicate fear. She said, "I'm very comfortable," saying that she wants the American people to see everything. She closed her eyes. And so now the experts have decided that whatever she may have wanted to shield from public view by using her own email server, what Clinton cannot hide is that she's now deeply discombobulated. Jim, I'm not sure how much a stock I put into the body language experts. I think it's just largely a matter of the fact that she's talking about something she knows could get her in a lot of trouble, and it's not what she wants to be talking about. It's pretty clear that her husband would have been a little more comfortable in trying to address all this stuff.
Greg, how can you say Dan Hill introduced the use of facial coding into market research? He's the author of four books, including Emotionomics, and his company has worked with nearly half of the world's top. Okay, whether or not you believe this whole facial analysis and body language, look, you don't have to be a self-professed expert in this, that Hillary was not seeming very confident. Oh, you mean wiped it with a Vic cloth? Oh, apparently she turned into Mickey Mouse in my mind in that moment there. She's acting like she's just been caught with her hand in the cookie jar and bad things are going to happen from here on out. Because there's really no good explanation for this. Like, the only reason you would do this is because you wanted to stay away from FOIA requests and congressional subpoenas and things like that. And if you can't do that, and then at the same time, oh, by the way, I totally wasn't worried about Chinese and Russian intelligence and anybody else hacking it. I think she realizes just how big this could be. The effort to say, oh, this is all partisan nonsense, is not working, is not persuading people. We don't really know what things are like when it's just her and Bill and Chelsea and David Brock. And, the real inner circle.
Don't forget Sid.
Puma, Anthony Weiner, Sid Blumenthal. They probably are feeling very tense and very upset and very stressed and this maybe even a sense of panic. And then the term discombobulated, whatever you think of this guy's style of facial analysis and things like that, doesn't seem all that hard to believe.
No, not at all. I think they're clearly worried. I think they're clearly worried about the fact that the FBI and the Justice Department are in on this. I think they're worried about the fact that it looks like a potential Joe Biden run would have the president's full blessing. Those are all things that they did not expect to be part of this campaign. All right, on to the bad martini now. And Jim, we have known for a while now, in fact, we've known since the day after the last midterm election, that under no circumstances will Mitch McConnell entertain a shutdown. At the same time, Republican lawmakers want very much to end federal taxpayer funding for Planned Parenthood, particularly in the wake of these gruesome videos, which, as we the last time we discussed it, showed a murder of a born alive infant surviving an abortion, and they cut through the face to procure brain and that sort of thing. So Mitch McConnell was on WYMT in Hazard, Kentucky. It's still summer recess, of course, and he was asked by a viewer who questioned him on cutting off funding to Planned Parenthood. McConnell said he had led on the issue, but that the numbers were against him.
One person asked, why haven't you led the charge against Planned Parenthood?
Well, I have. We just don't have the votes to get the outcome that we'd like. Again, the president has the pen to sign it. You know, if he doesn't sign it, it doesn't happen. But yeah, we voted on that already in the Senate. We'll vote on it again. But I would remind all of your viewers, the way you make a law in this country, the Congress has to pass it and the president has to sign it. The president's made it very clear he's not going to sign any bill that includes defunding of Planned Parenthood. So That's another issue that awaits a new president, hopefully with a different point of view about Planned Parenthood.
Jim, I think a lot of people would look back at that and say, you know, you could promise not to pass something that includes funding for Planned Parenthood. That's kind of how the negotiating works.
About 2 weeks ago, he said the Obama has a great likelihood of success in the Iran nuclear deal. So why do we have you guys here, really? You know, like, didn't that majority supposed to mean something? Yes, I understand the difficulty of this. One of the things that, you know, you see this growing murmuring in Republican circles, there seems to be this sense of, well, if we don't touch certain issues, we won't get grief over it. We won't, you know, the media won't call us this. Look, you're going to get the war on women stuff no matter what you do. There is no universe in which Democrats don't accuse Republicans of having a war on women. So in that case, you should just do what you think is right and not worry about that. And I think in this case, Planned Parenthood, what we're seeing in these videos, is so horrific, it is worth taking the stand. And if you lose, you lose, but at least you took the stand. When you refuse to even say, well, we're not likely to win, and you know, they're probably going to filibuster us, you know, you completely understand why the grassroots is so frustrated. They worked their tails off in 2014. They feel like they've got nothing to show for it, even on stuff that is just like rip out your heartstrings issues like the Planned Parenthood video. Like, why is this so unbelievably difficult? Why do we have zero leverage in this when we have the majorities in Congress? And Mitch McConnell's got to answer that question.
And another point he mentioned right before the recess, when mentioning that there would be no shutdown no matter what, the premise of the question of one of the reporters there heading into that comment was that the Democrats have thrown up a lot of roadblocks for these various appropriations bills. One of the things the Republicans insisted would happen was regular order, appropriations bill by appropriations bill, not ending up in some massive pork-laden omnibus bill, because that's the only way you could get something done at the 11th hour. Given McConnell's logic here on Planned Parenthood, is there any reason to think that the Democrats won't get their way on that too?
At this point, Republicans start feeling like, look, this is a rigged game. My friend Ace of Spades used the phrase, you know, failure theater. There's Republicans try to look like they're fighting, but they play the Washington Generals, the Obama administration's Harlem Globetrotters, and they end up losing. And, you know, we didn't win. You're just going to have to give us more money and give us more support. Grassroots activists want to see some payoff for all their hard work, and they don't feel like they're getting it right now.
The more that stuff like this happens, the same people who like Mitch McConnell and are pulling their hair over Donald Trump, they're going to get more of what they don't like in the presidential campaign.
Hey, let's face it, McConnell doesn't have that much hair to lose.
All right, Jim. Just yesterday, we were talking about the explosive growth of ISIS. It's in Asia. It's in North Africa. It's in the Middle East. It's all over the place. And the U.S. strategy is not working. We also mentioned that the U.S. was kind of looking at reworking its strategy since it wasn't working. This is not what we had in mind, and certainly not from this person. From the Daily Beast, members of Al-Qaeda's branch in Syria have a surprising advocate in the quarters of American power. Retired Army General and former CIA Director David Petraeus, the former commander of U.S. forces in Iraq and Afghanistan, has been quietly urging U.S. officials to consider using so-called moderate members of Al-Qaeda's Nusra Front to fight ISIS in Syria. Four sources similar with the conversations, including one person who spoke with Petraeus directly, told the Daily Beast. The heart of the idea stems from Petraeus' experience in Iraq in 2007, when as part of a broader strategy to defeat an Islamist insurgency, the U.S. persuaded Sunni militias to stop fighting with Al-Qaeda and to work with the American military. Jim, this seems like our Syrian rebel situation all over again. We just talked about yesterday how almost none of them actually materialized, and the ones that did got kidnapped. So if we're down to hoping that Al-Qaeda will join us and do the right thing, apparently we're out of ideas.
Yeah. I mean, the only, you know, we all know the slogan or the saying, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And, you know, great historians and military experts and folks like that can really analyze that and say, think it's circumstances in which, yes, the enemy of our enemy is our friend, can be a temporary ally of convenience. And we can think of circumstances in which, no, we should not be working with them. You know, I suppose you could say, well, if we could work with Stalin to defeat Hitler, we could work with one evil force to defeat another evil force. On the other hand, Greg, it's September 1st. Right. 10 days from now, we mark the 14th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. And if you'd said to someone in September 2001, oh, yeah, 14 years down the road, we'll be working with Al-Qaeda to fight other Islamist fanatics. I think most people would have, the heads would have exploded. You'd be like, how on earth could you say that? Look, David Petraeus probably knows more about the Middle East and Al-Qaeda and Islamist extremism than I'm ever going to know. Having said that, this really kind of sounds like an idea that sounds too morally complicated to work. I suppose if you could somehow trick one side into attacking the another, there could be advantages to us, but I just can't imagine anything in which we give an implied or quasi-overt sense of approval to a group affiliated with Al-Qaeda. It just, you'd think that, you know, killing 3,000 Americans would put you on our crap list forever, and we would never, ever work with you. So David Petraeus can be wrong. I think we all thank him and salute him for his work in Iraq and his effort with the surge. He's going to be probably remembered as one of our great generals. But he also is one of those guys who really believe there'd be great advantages and great progress can be made from negotiating with the Taliban. And I think experience has shown that is not the case at all. And it was only this crazy right winger named Mitt Romney who said that wasn't going to work. So sometimes, you know, people can, you know, may not see the forest for the trees or may kind of lose perspective on this. And I just don't think this is an idea that will ever fly with the public. Probably would be too much of a moral compromise, even for the all-important effort of attempting to defeat ISIS.
If we did try to bring them into the fold, I'm sure we'd give them some other name to confuse people as to think it's not Al-Qaeda. But basically,
the base.
Exactly. So, yeah, if this actually happens, our chief allies in trying to push back ISIS are Iran and Al-Qaeda.
Yay. We're working with a guy named Shmawahiri. Shmaiman al-Shmawahiri. And he's totally different from that guy who's been hiding in Pakistan. Let's say this: we do this alliance, we work with this Al-Qaeda Nusra Front, they defeat ISIS, then what? Do we have to turn our guns on the Nusra Front guys? Or would we have strengthened them and put the Nusra Front in charge of Syria? Like, you can see a lot of problems flowing out from this idea, and you kind of want to say, you know, General, with all due respect, Mr. Former CIA Director, maybe go back to the drawing board on that one. It just seems like too much of a moral compromise for the American people to ever accept.
What a depressing way to end this one. Jim.
Yeah, yay.
Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.